The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement. I hope I find you well wherever you are, listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. A big thank you to everyone that got in touch with me in relation to the interview I did with Lily Kelleher, who was 100 years of age recently. And Lily, if you're listening, you got a massive reaction. The amount of texts that came into the programme and messages online and on Facebook and everything else was something else. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and thanks a million for doing it, and thanks to Niamh Daly for setting it all up. Now, a very busy programme on the programme this morning, as usual, but before I get to what's coming up, I want to say hello to a very special young listener from Drummond. Padraig Donal Cronin. He always listens into the Saturday Supplement, so I want to say hello to you, Padraig, and I hope you're well, and I hope you'll enjoy the programme this morning. Now, on the Saturday Supplement, we'll be hearing from Eoin O'Shea about his new book, From Ballots to Bullets, Politics and Electioneering in Post-Civil War Kerry, 1922-33. Eoin is a great historian and author, and that'll be coming up in the next hour. But first, the Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church in Carhartt-Savine has recently undergone a renovation, and I went along to the church to hear from some of those involved and also to find out about the history of this church. And I spoke firstly to Leonard Hurley.
My name is Leonard Hurley. I'm on the committee, the refurbishing and fundraising committee.
So we're here inside in the Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church, and firstly I'm going to speak with I always refer to my old history teacher Leonard Hurley, and what a great history teacher he was. Leonard, we are in a very historic and spiritual place, but it is a historic place as well, we should say that. Can you describe the formations of this church?
Yes, first of all, the main motivator here, of course, was Canon Brosnan, a Castle Island man. And the story goes that he was in Killarney on one occasion in the late 1879, I think, and he met an Irish-American a man who brought up about how to honour the great O'Connell. And lots of chat and so on. And the idea came from the American, I understood, and Kenneth Brosnan went with it, that a substantial church would be the right way to go forward, given that O'Connell, of course, would be the great emancipator and who saw Catholic emancipation through. So that's the original idea, came from an Irish-American, I'm told, in Killarney. So then the building started in the 1880s, and the church was opened in 1902. The first mass was said by a local priest, a Father O'Sullivan, and during the time of the building of it, of course, it was a major project, not just for Carhartt-Savine and the Iveragh Peninsula, but for the county and for the country as a whole. Canon Brosnan and some of the curates here, over time, they set up what can only be described as a unique fundraising events in all over the world, from Australia to America. So the bulk of the money for this particular project came from abroad. It's worth bringing to light here that from the present refurbishing, the bulk of the money is coming from the parish of Carhartt-Savine and surrounding parishes, and from the county as a whole. That's a big change indeed. Also what bringing to mind would be the beautiful stained glass windows. They're quite unique, and they were built by Franz Mayer of Munich. And there's one stained glass window in particular, and that's the betrothal of Mary and Joseph. It's a unique stained glass window. It's in St. Joseph's altar. And I understand there's only about 6 or 7 of stained glass windows of the betrothal in the whole country. Franz Mayer had offices not just in Europe, but even in America and further afield. So we were lucky in that when we contacted them, they still had invoices for a number of these stained glass windows. Also, Franz Mayer had a hand in... they were the main people who brought forward the fabulous Stations of the Cross. And these are unique now. They've been cleaned by a local expert, and they will be ready to be replaced again on the walls of the church. So could I just make one other point? That back in the 1950s, a former parish priest, Monsignor John Lane, brought in the heating system that was there up till recently. So you could say we had 70 years since the 1950s of that system. It has now been replaced by a more up-to-date modern system. Monsignor also built 2 churches in the town, or sorry, in the parish, one in Filemore and one in Hattubret. And of course, he sold parish fields in order to help him in the various projects which he had. He was afterwards parish priest of Tralee. So there's a lot of history in the building, as you rightly said. We're very, very proud of it, and of course very proud of the name of the great O'Connell the Liberator.
And the only lay person to have a church called after him.
So I'm told,
yeah.
Yes, that certainly in Ireland.
In
Ireland, definitely. Now, there may be other places abroad, but I'm not aware of it, you know.
Yeah, the size of it, and this is something that, you know, when I was young, I often contemplated. Like, was there a need for the size that was built at that time? You know, you're talking about a time of forced immigration in South Kerry. You're well aware of the Belgravia and the Farnesia coming into this area and people having to leave. Mm. But you mentioned the finances, a lot of it came from abroad. Was there a need for such a size of a church at that time?
I suppose, yes. It was overbuilt, I suppose, really. And, I mean, when you think about the stone, the granite stone came from Northern Ireland. There was no expense spared, and very large for a small area. But then again, when you look at why was it built, why was it named O'Connell? O'Connell was such a huge figure, not just in Ireland, in Europe, internationally. He was quoted regularly in newspapers from Russia to South America. And another thing worth noting, we have a plaque of parish priests, former parish priests, in the church here now. And at the very end, there's a quote which actually Dr. Murish Brick found, and it was a quote in relation to a mass that was said in Notre Dame in Paris commemorating O'Connell, and that was, in far as I remember, 1848, a mass in Notre Dame in relation to O'Connell. And we do, of course, know that Pope Leo the 13th was the Pope that gave permission to go ahead and build this magnificent cathedral-like church.
Yeah. And is that why the foundation stone, or, you know, often if you're a bit late for Mass, you might hang out at the tower door, and you can see that written there inside the tower door in an inscription.
That's right. And that was a gift from the Pope, and it came from the catacombs. The stone came from the catacombs in Rome. So a huge amount of history here. And when you look at the present structure, and you see what has been achieved in the refurbishing here. And by the way, could I say, I forgot to mention that it was launched, the project, the whole project was launched by Bishop Bill Murphy, and it was launched in May of 2005 in Colossian-Ashkelige. And at that time, the parish priest here was Canon Owen Mangan, and Canon Owen was replaced by the now Bishop William Crean, Billy Crean. And of course, we're very, very lucky now to have Father Larry Kelly, our parish priest. And of course, we have, and delighted to have, Father Sean Jones, who was brought new life and so on, new ideas and enthusiasm. And of course, our chairperson, Mary McGowan, who was an absolute treasure, a great find, and a great lady to deal with the media and builders and architects and so on.
Yeah, excellent. And we will be talking to them very shortly. And listeners at home, you can see why this man was such a great history teacher, the way he can bring a place to life. Just, Leonard, if we describe the church, because there was a great aerial shot not too long ago, there was a bit of drone footage. It shows the perfect cross, the shape of it.
That's right.
So, like, was that of the time? Was the architectural design of the time? And just describe it to people at home, what's in front of us here.
Yes, it is in the shape of a cross. And recently, a young Ukrainian guy who has a drone, Kirill, and a great guy altogether, and he took photographs of the church from overhead, and it displayed something that we had never seen before. Nobody would have ever seen the church from those angles. So it is in the shape of a cross. The high altar is an excellent, if people were looking for art, you'll find it in the high altar. You'll find it in the fantastic stained glass windows. So there's a lot to be admired, even for somebody who might not be a believer. They can come in here and they can see art, architecture, the music as well here at times. That's the next item, would be the organ, and there's some work to be done on the organ later on, and of course all of that brings the services here to an enjoyable occasion for all.
Yeah, and we will be talking later on. I might talk about it with Mary in relation to Gavin Ring having a concert here as well that's coming up, and the acoustics in here are meant to be just naturally unbelievable. We're looking up there, and this is something that came into my head. I was told by someone a long time ago when the upper places were open. Is that where the men used to go up, and you might get a fag butt on the head or whatever? Yeah. What used to go on up there? You imagine you came here as a child, didn't it? Yeah. That wasn't today or yesterday.
That's right. I can remember when the gallery was open on occasions for missions in particular. And yes, they closed them after a while because there tended to be, on occasions, things happening that they shouldn't. So, but I suppose if you look at that space, quite a large space there, and if that were to be open on a regular basis, this church would hold many more hundreds of people.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So. And there used to be a pulpit as well. I remember that, the big pulpit that used to be here. That was the fire and brimstone days, I'd imagine.
That's right, yeah. Father Sean O'Leary, another former parish priest, the late Father Sean O'Leary, he was the parish priest that brought the new approach to the Mass and services in general by opening up the altar area, by taking down the rails that were there, and also taking down the pulpit. And the pulpit now was used as a seat here, and also the other part of the church where the altar, it wasn't totally destroyed when it was taken down, other sections were used.
It's great to hear it was reused. Yeah. Another thing that came into my head here is I interviewed Donald Courtney, the late great actor from Killarney, and he did a one-man show on Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty.
Yeah.
And that day before, so I interviewed him in the Sack Street, then he did his one-man play, and we did a question and answers after here. It was absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought him outside to Hugh O'Flaherty's grave, mm-hmm. and he's buried here as well in the grounds here.
That's right. I actually remember Monsignor quite young at the time, and not that young, I suppose, but he was a tall, quiet, very unassuming man. I think a lot of people didn't realise what an outstanding figure he was, and his grave is still visited very, very regularly by all kinds of people. And there's a tradition, I think among the Jews in particular, where they leave a stone on the grave. And there are quite a few stones on his grave. So I would assume that some of the people coming through would be of the Jewish faith.
Yeah.
But no, it's a great place of pilgrimage, actually. And we're very proud that Monsignor is here. Very proud indeed.
Very good. Just finally, on the whole, I suppose, the meaning of this church, like, this is where people come to get christened, to be baptised, communions. I had my confirmation here, I remember. I was dreading the slap I'd get from the bishop. It wasn't as bad as people made out. You know, there's been marriages here. My own father, we had his funeral just in February. It is a deep connection in this community.
Oh, that's very true, yeah, very true. From being a young guy here, I was in the choir for years and years. The convent girls' school, secondary school and primary school, and the boys' primary and secondary school would have sung here on great occasions. The one that comes to mind was 1960, when it was the centenary of the Christian Brothers in the town, and we had a choir here. My father happened to be the choir master. We had a choir of close to 100, and we sang sopranos, altos, tenors and basses, and a lot of distinguished individuals, including the bishop and so on, were here for that. But that was a big, big occasion at the time in the town. And, of course, Corpus Christi's as well, particularly would have been other big occasions. And the usual festivals, Christmas and Easter time. And people, all these great events resonate with people. And particularly as you get older, you look back and you think of those great occasions. Someone read recently that somebody mentioned not of Catholic or Christian faith, I think, and they were saying, they were thinking, this particular person was thinking of becoming a Catholic. They said, why? For the burial.
Leonard Hurley there, and we're going to be hearing more from the Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee O'Kerry.
Now, if you want to get in touch with the programme during the week, you can email jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Now, let's return to the Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church, which recently underwent some renovation work.
Father Sean Jones, parish priest of Drummond and also a member of the fundraising committee for the O'Connell Restoration.
Father Jones, thanks a million for coming to talk to me. You're here now about a year, is it? More than a year? How's it been going?
That's right, yeah. So last July, I remember the day, 17th of July 2024, it was a great privilege by Bishop Ray to ask me to come down to Evora to become parish priest of Drummond, which is the parishes of Waterville and Drummond itself, and also as moderator, Cahir Daniel. And I suppose I kind of came with the L plates on, and I think they're still on because this is a very different, I suppose, a very different territory to me. You know, being from Iveagh, we never kind of ventured past the Sleevmish Mountains, so coming to South Kerry has been a very, very different experience. And I suppose for myself, I've been used to urban ministry in the towns of Tralee and Killarney, so coming to South Kerry has been a very much different experience for me. You know, I suppose just number one, the vastness of the area. And I came down with an electric car, and the old battery isn't holding up too well down here. You know, going up Coomakish to there is a bit of a challenge, all right. But no, I must say it's been an absolute privilege to be here. But also as well, when Bishop Ray appointed me, he asked me to collaborate closely with the parishes around. And it's been a great honour for me to be a support to Father Larry here in Carrigstaveen, and indeed to Father Patsy out in Prior Parish as well, but most especially in Carrigstaveen, where this massive project is being undertaken at the moment. And it's lovely to be part of it.
Yeah. As a structure, it's so impressive, isn't it, Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church?
Yeah, actually a couple of weeks ago I was here and I was actually explaining to people one of the things in medieval art and architecture is to see the church really as I suppose an image of the Garden of Eden. And if you look here behind us, you see the massive pillars coming up from the ground, and they're like the trunks of trees, and the arches almost like the branches leading out. And I suppose it's that sense of giving, I suppose, honour to God's creation, and you know, for all the beautiful work that went into this building. And as I often say when I come to celebrate various moments with people, is if these walls could speak, the countless sentiments and prayers that have been breathed into them over the generations, you know, it's just magical. There's a sacredness about this place, and I suppose I look forward to coming here on my turn to celebrate Mass here in Carrigstaveen. And I suppose my place here, really, I suppose you'd be often wondering, I'm definitely the odd one out in the lineup today, because why is the parish priest of Drumhead Waterville speaking about a Carrigstaveen parish? But I suppose that's the whole desire going forward, is that we're working as one area. You know, we have to have sharing of resources, sharing of energy. And I think that's the most important thing going forward, is that it's not just the town parish looking after itself. We're here for each other. Mm. And I suppose that's why I'm giving my energy, my time, contributions, and the support of Waterville people and Drumhead as well, and indeed Cahir Daniel, Valentia and Prior as well, to support our town parishes. Because I think, Joe, that's the way things are going to go forward as well in the future. You know, the numbers for ourselves as priests are kind of going down, but the faith is still alive, and the commitment of lay people is very much strong as well. So it's about really, I suppose, empowering the people in the Iveragh to support the town parish of Carrigstaveen, because it's such a beautiful structure.
Yeah, and what I noticed as well over the last period while the renovations were going on, were people going to different masses that they might never have gone to. So that was kind of an unusual experience for people as well.
Exactly. You know, here in Carrigstaveen, like, a lot of people mightn't have gone to Filemore Church for Mass or Arthurbrid. And even for myself, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to celebrate Mass in Filemore. And actually the same architect, Boyd Barrett, was the same architect that built my own church in my van, which is considered the Basilica of North Kerry, because it's a massive church as well. So it was just lovely for everybody to have a different experience of the different faith communities here in Carrigstaveen as well. And I suppose just to thank the faith communities of Arthurbrid and Filemore as well for their great welcome and openness to allowing the bigger congregations to come to their churches and give a bit of life as well to the outside communities, which was fantastic.
People don't like change, and there was a lot of change over the last few months, you know, when the church was closed, and, you know, even the kind of that mentioned. How do people adapt to that?
Do you know, people are very generous and very understanding, Joe. I even commented there on our last weekend before the main church, the O'Connell Church, was opened. I thank people for their generosity and the sacrifices they made, because I remember there in the Nun's Chapel here at the side of the O'Connell Church, people packed in there on a wet and windy Saturday night, the door open, people outside, you know, and that took a lot of sacrifices. And, you know, it kind of reminded people back in the day, you know, that if they were out on the Mass Rocks, the weather didn't bother them too much. And the same sentiment was here. They knew what was being done, and they knew what the project was going to involve. So just to say thanks to the people for their understanding for that, you know.
Yeah. Are you enjoying yourself here?
In South Kerry?
Yeah.
I must say, look, it's been an incredible experience. You know, I'm still getting to know the townlands, still getting to know these little small roads that kind of link the place together. And I suppose, no more than yourself as well, over the last while, my Irish wasn't too good in coming down to South Kerry. And, you know, I'm very mindful of the strong, love of Irish down here, and especially in my own parish as well, in Drumhead as well. There's a great love of the Irish language there, and especially with our local national school as well, Scoil na Siúlfá, the Killinlea. And I think it's a lovely opportunity for me just to go back into that learning of Irish as well, and especially to celebrate the sacraments. Oscailg as well is important for myself as well. But no, overall, I must say it's a beautiful experience. It's often said, Joe, and I've spoken to a lot of priests that came to South Kerry over the time, that when you come to South Kerry, a lot of priests don't want to leave. And I kind of see the reason why. The people, the place, even the connection with history. You know, like I'm thinking there of the Red Monk out in Scariff Island, and you know, just the history with people like him, Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty, Daniel O'Connell, Sister Margaret Mary as well, connected with this founder of an order over in America. Mm. But just the countless people that we mightn't have heard about that have contributed to place and people as well. And I suppose what we're doing here in the O'Connell Church is given, I suppose, is given a living testimony to those people as well, in an age maybe where a lot of things are closing down, where there's an uncertainty around different places, institutions and businesses. You know, it's lovely to see a project developing rather than receding, basically. You know?
Very good. Well, I can tell you that the parishioners are very happy that you've come here anyway, and you'd a hard act to follow it, Father Finucane, outside, but you've done a great job at that. And I mentioned, you know, the sad occasion of my father's passing, but we also had the great occasion of the christening of our first child, which you did as well, so I want to thank you for that here on air for that. But for now, Father Jones, thanks a million for talking to me.
Mille bricks.
Yeah, Father Sean Jones there. We're going to be hearing more from the Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Hi, Stephen Benner here, inviting you to our 261 Ford Sales event this November. Get unmissable savings across the range, including the Adventurous Explorer, Cuba Jenny, and the iconic Capri, with 0% finance available, a 5-year service plan, and a free home charger with all electric vehicles. Terms and conditions apply. So don't miss the 261 Ford Sales event at Kerry Motorworks, Mile High Tralee.
Better hearing is better together. At Audiology Medical Services, we're offering microsuction earwax removal for just €100 for two people, normally €70 each. And that's not all. Your visit includes a free adult hearing test. Bring someone you care about and share the gift of better hearing today. But hurry, this offer won't last forever. Free phone 1-800-501-501 to book at our Tralee or Killarney clinics. Audiology Medical Services, giving you back the gift of hearing.
Hi, I'm Carmen. I'm 8 years old. I was born 10 weeks early, just 2 pounds and 11 ounces, and spent 7 weeks of my life in hospital. Now I'm one of the tallest in my class in Spawn National School. I have two moms and a little brother, and I love spending time with my family. That's where all the best stories happen. My nana is from Chile. We celebrate Chilean Day together on the 18th of September. Dancing the Cueca, a dance where two people circle each other holding a white handkerchief. My other nana is from Chile. She's the queen of knitting and baking. I also love spending time with my granddad, gardening and picking tomatoes with him. He teaches me so much. I like going to Barrow Beach and helping the sea creatures by picking up the rubbish. Quiero mucho a mi familia. My family loves each other and we stick together. I wish everyone could have a family like mine.
Many Voices, One Kingdom is brought to you by Radio Kerry and funded by Cumasún na mBan with the television licence fee.
For great Christmas party nights and memorable festive dining, there's an experience for everyone with the O'Donoghue Ring Collection. Create meaningful celebrations across a range of hotels, bars and restaurants, including Killarney Plaza Hotel, The Tan Yard, Café du Parc, O'Donoghue Public House, Pigs Lane and many more in Killarney. Visit odrcollection.com.
Some moments reward timing. Well, this is one of them. Corcoran's Black Friday sale is now on, with extraordinary savings across every department. From statement sofas and dreamy mattresses to elegant dining and irresistible flooring. In Killarney, Tralee, Cahir Sabine, Newcastle West or shop online. The right piece, the right time, the best price. Don't miss Corcoran's Black Friday sale. Now on, in-store and online.
Every weekday from 3, let Brendan Fuller steer you through your afternoon with great music and entertainment on Radio Kerry's Afternoon Show in association with Billy Nocton Volvo Tralee. Hop in for a show packed full of features, interviews, brand new music and plenty more to keep you entertained. The Afternoon Show on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Billy Nocton's Tralee, home to the Volvo Recharge range of pure electric and plug-in hybrid cars. Designed for a better way to move through the world. Unlock electric at billynocton.ie.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now let's return to the interviews I did at Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church this week, which has recently undergone renovation work.
Mary McGowan, Chair of the Parish Council and PRO for the Restoration Committee and Chairperson of that.
Mary, tell us about the work that has been done in the church to date.
Well, the work that has been done, it was closed for 6 months. I was asked to form a committee, fundraising committee, which I did. And the first thing that they did was the electrics, the new flooring, and the heating system. They also have heating under the seats. Both sides of the centre of the church, they have heaters under the seats, which is good, and infrared heaters over. And actually the sound system is excellent now in comparison to what it was. And so the structured, or the new tiling, they had to do as well, because there was asbestos under the floor, and the asbestos material had to be, by a specialised, had to be taken away by a specialised company, and therefore that took longer than we thought it would. And so we first were to be back in the church for the 30th of September, but then it happened that everything sort of was delayed because of all the different things. But I must say that the parishioners of Daniel O'Connell Church have been superb. Their generosity is amazing. They were able to collect 500,000 euro for the so that we could then borrow the money from St. Brendan's Trust to get the job done, and then we would pay St. Brendan's Trust back. Then we started off very small, but with the fundraising. But then gradually, the people were excellent. We also had the men's choir put on a concert in Filemore Hall, and that was a great evening, and also helped with the fundraising. The other thing was that I applied for 2 grants, and on behalf of our committee, and one was the Goubet grant in the UK, and the other one was the Benefic Trust, and they both were excellent. They're also UK in Gloucestershire, and they gave most generously. So I mean, we're very, very grateful for anything at all that we can get. Then we were thrilled that after 6 months, when the church opened one Saturday night. Now there was only the centre of the church available for us to sit, but that night at the 6 o'clock mass, there were over 200 people. And we were so happy, all of us. We're very proud of this church, and we were so happy. My mother was from Kilcoman, just out the road, and I always said I'd retire to Carstaveen. I love it very much, and has great memories for me.
And you have a big concert coming up on this Saturday night, the 22nd, as well. And it's going to be broadcast on Radio Kerry then at Christmas time with Gavin Ring.
That's right. We are indeed fortunate to have Gavin Ring. He is absolutely excellent. And we are going to have it's on Saturday night coming. And so it's free to come. And there'll be just a collection at the end, and we're really very grateful to Gavin for organising this, and I hope people will support us, because every penny that you put into this church, that it doesn't matter how small the donation, you will be part of this church. When you come into it and come into the church and view it, you will have the great joy of saying, I contributed to this.
And we're sitting here on these beautiful pews, and they seem to be lovely and polished. They're
yes.
A big step up from what was here before. They're really
Aren't they beautiful? Yeah. Yes, they are like new. Just you think we bought them brand new, but they're beautifully restored, and so happy with them. And now we've covering on the cushion covering on the kneeler, which is great. And I think it's absolutely beautiful to have these.
So they're the original.
They're the original, and I can't believe when they came back, I thought, oh my God, they're like new.
Yeah, it's like a French polishing or something.
Yeah, isn't it? Well, they were excellently done. And also we got the Stations of the Cross, which they're not in yet. We're waiting till the very end to put them in. But they are restored. So beautiful. So,
they were so impressive, the Stations of the Cross here. Yes. I've never seen anything like them, the visual. They're just beautiful. They're like, I don't know, works of art. So that'll be interesting to see those.
You need to come and see these when they go up. Mm. They'll be superb, absolutely excellent. So the other thing is Michael English concert. We have the 4th of December, and that certainly is going to be a big event for all of the for all of us here in the town. And there's big signs all the way in for people to come. And again, we'd appreciate if lots of people would come to support us, because everything helps in making this church. It's for our future generations. You know, for not when we're long gone, it's for future generations to come. So,
yeah, it's amazing to think, like, when you see old photos of the town, they're from an era that anyone around now wasn't around then, that it's really outliving everyone, you know, and that, that it continues to do so.
And then you have the youngsters, and you have a lovely, beautiful baby yourself. Mm. And when he grows up and sees able to come to this church, you were confirmed here. Mm. And so when your child comes here, it'll be absolutely beautiful to have a lovely church, warm church to come into. And thank God, I'm so delighted to be part of this. And I'd like everyone that's listening, please be part of us.
Yeah. And if people want to keep abreast of your story, a lot of people listen to this abroad, where should they go?
You can donate on the GoFundMe page, and also through the bank account, the AIB restoration account in Carsevine AIB branch. It's the restoration account if anyone abroad would like to donate. And they can also come to the parish office and donate there too. The parish office is open during the day, but if they want to go to the bank, then obviously they can go to the bank and do the restoration account there.
Very good. Thanks a million for talking to me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
My name is Hannah Lochnan, and I'm a conservation architect.
And tell us about your role here, Hannah, at Daniel O'Connell Memorial Church.
I was contacted by Carsevine Parish Committee late 2022, early 2023, to help them with a programme of refurbishments for the church. They had, in maybe around 2007, they had done a big re-roofing job, and they had repointed all the facades. And they were, in 2023, they were in a position to start looking at the interior of the church. And the project was mostly to do with services. The main issue was the heating system, which was originally installed in the 1950s, so it was well beyond its useful life, very, very expensive to run, and it didn't actually heat the building. Mm. So that was a big problem. So the project started out really about the heating, but when we reviewed the church, we said we should consider rewiring as well. Again, the wiring was beyond its useful life. There was no fire safety system in the church whatsoever, and in light of recent big accidents in Notre Dame Cathedral and St. Mel's in Longford was another one, and even since we started on site, a church in Donegal, I think it's Navarra in Donegal, burned to the ground. So, everybody recognised that the provision of a proper life safety system in the church was important as well. So they were the main things. When we reviewed the church, it was evident straight away that the floor tiling that was in the church, it wasn't original. It was probably put in the time that the 1950s heating system was put in, and it was vinyl tiles, the type of tiles you see in school classrooms throughout the country, but it contained asbestos. So we couldn't really do any kind of trenching in the floor or anything until that floor was dealt with. So the first job really was asbestos removal, which happened in May and June of this year, 2025. And then we were left with the problem of, well, what do we put on the floor now? So it was decided to put back in what we reckon was the original floor, a tiled floor, and in a style that is in keeping with the church.
Yeah. Just for yourself, as a conservation architect, what's it like to work on this building and what's the significance of this building architecturally?
It's a very significant building. The Department of Heritage and Housing have what they call the National Inventory of Architectural Heritage, where they record all of Ireland's important buildings and they assign them various ratings. The O'Connell Memorial Church is rated as of national importance. I suppose what's more important about it than the architecture is its social history. The idea that, you know, just a few decades after the famine, such a project was undertaken in a small town in southwest Kerry. It was a monumental undertaking, and that it was executed to such a high quality is a testament, really, I suppose, to the vision of Canon Brosnan, the parish priest at the time, who drove the whole project, and which I suppose you would say it broke him, really. But then when you look at the church, like just the sheer size of it, it's the same. I keep saying to any time I was getting quotes for anything, for the flooring, for the electrics or anything, I was saying to people, now don't think church, think cathedral. It's the size of a cathedral, really. I suppose the furnishings in it too, the benches, where the cast iron frames of the benches was made in Scotland. The builder of the church was Scottish as well, actually. I suppose he won a tender to build the church. The stained glass windows came from Germany. I'm trying to think what else now, yeah. But, you know, it was... I suppose even though they were strapped for cash all the time, they were always raising money, and the project inched along slowly because they were always short of money. That didn't mean that they didn't look for quality. So I suppose the challenge for us in the refurbishment was to stay true to that original vision and to make sure that whatever we do here will last for at least another generation, if not longer.
Thanks a million for talking to me.
No problem. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, and I want to thank Mary McGowan and Father Sean Jones and Leonard Hurley and, of course, Hannah as well there for speaking to me during the week. Now, we'll take a break and we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Kerry. Now, next Saturday on the Saturday Supplement, it is the last Saturday of the month, so it is Frank Lewis who will be along, and his programme is The Grave of Nurse Ellie Buckley, born in Mount Cain in Knocknagree in 1913, was found in Lewisham in London, 75 years after her passing in 1942. Ellie had to nurse patients with tuberculosis, TB, a highly infectious disease. Irish nurses were cannon fodder, just like poor men sent to the front in World Wars I and II. Ellie Buckley's story, written by her niece Eileen Fleming, is included in the 2024 edition of the Slieveluchra Journal. All 21 editions of the journal since the first published in 1982 have been edited by journalist Donald Hickey. Stories from the 2024 journal and its veteran editor will feature on the Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Frank Lewis next Saturday, November 29th from 9 to 11 a.m. The programme was first broadcast in November 2024. And also, I got a message into the programme to wish the best of luck to the Moyvan Parish and the organising committee on their upcoming concert next weekend, Sunday the 30th of November, in the Tintawn Theatre, Ballybunion. It will be a wonderful Christmas-themed candlelit concert with Frank McNamara and his guests. The committee are doing fantastic work trying to raise as much as possible for palliative care hospice in Tralee, and they're asking you to please come and support this most worthy cause. And you remember we were speaking about that not too long ago. And also Tony Noonan, his official opening of Noonan's Christmas Lights in Temple Glanton is on the 13th of November at 5 p.m. And All-Ireland Champions Kerry will be present with the Sam Maguire Cup. Captain Gavin White and other team members will be there. So that's Tony Noonan, and we want to wish him all the best of luck with his Christmas Lights, which he's been doing every year. So it's on the 30th of November at 5 p.m. and the official turn on of the lights. They'll have their ambassador and friend, the great Nicky Quaid, to switch the lights on. He'll be joined by local sporting icons as well as the great Santa Claus himself. Brew and Banter Coffee will be with them on the evening, keeping the people fueled and warm with hot chocolates and treats. And Noonan's Lights for Charity has been running for over 25 years in Temple Glanton, raising thousands of euro for some very worthwhile charities. This year, the money raised from Tony's Lights will go to four amazing charities: Milford Hospice, Sliella Mental Health Services North Cork, Recovery Haven in Tralee, and Limerick Suicide Watch. And they will also make a donation to Drumcolour 26 this year. So that's the official opening of Noonan's Christmas Lights, 30th of November at 5 p.m. Now we're going to take a break for the news at 10, and I'll join you again in the next hour, where we'll be speaking to Eoin O'Shea about his new book, From Ballots to Bullets: Politics and Electioneering in Post-Civil War Kerry, 1922-33.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars, packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Kerry. We're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement, and I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Now, as I mentioned earlier, From Bullets to Ballots offers a unique insight into the origins of Civil War politics in Ireland, with particular focus on Kerry. It's an in-depth examination of how politics developed in this constituency in the decade after 1923. It reveals that, despite the underlying tensions and a profound legacy of suffering and loss, democracy endured and the ballot prevailed over the bullet as a means of settling political differences. From Bullets to Ballots: Politics and Electioneering in Post-Civil War Kerry, 1922-1933. Its author, Eoin O'Shea, joins me now. Eoin, you're very welcome. How are you?
Very good, Joe. Thanks. Nice to talk to you again.
We often hear that as a term, civil war politics. Can you describe to people what it is? Is it as simple as, people kind of imagine, that it's Fianna Fáil against Fine Gael?
To some extent, the short answer to that question is yes. Part of my motivation for researching this whole topic and writing about it was to examine the phenomenon of civil war politics in Ireland. And, you know, even today, occasionally when people are talking about politics or in the media, we hear about the civil war politics and how the civil war defined politics in Ireland for generations. And of course, the ultimate statement perhaps of the ending of civil war politics was the coming together of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in government. But more than many other countries in the world, what happened in 1922-23 during the Civil War absolutely and utterly dominated politics and political debate and political discourse and elections for decades afterwards. So my approach was to look at that in County Kerry, in a constituency that was probably more affected than any other county by the Civil War.
Yeah. Just describe to people again that mightn't know, but your vast interest in politics and where it came from. And this is your 10th book on, is it?
There or thereabouts, yes, that I've either been author of or worked with others on a couple of publications. I suppose the interest, I've had a lifelong interest in politics, and particularly in elections. I suppose I've kind of seen politics from different perspectives over the course of my lifetime. I was involved, very involved in a political party. I contested an election. I was a director of elections. I worked in Leinster House for several years in a communications capacity. Obviously, then as a journalist, I would have covered elections and politics. And, in more recent years, having written about various aspects of our past, have been interested in political developments in Kerry and in Ireland. So I really wanted to get into the nitty-gritty of what happened politically in Kerry and in Ireland, indeed, after the Civil War, because interestingly enough, even though a lot has been written and spoken about the Civil War itself and the Revolution, the War of Independence, the Rising, there hasn't been an awful lot of research done on the period immediately after the Civil War, and how the Civil War defined and dominated elections in particular, and how sometimes during those elections, those Civil War tensions actually bubbled to the surface, and how other parties who weren't particularly defined by the Civil War or didn't emerge from the Civil War split were actually marginalised and sidelined as a result.
Is Kerry at that time, is it a microcosm of what's happening across the country, or is Kerry its own unique animal?
It's a bit of both. The election results in Kerry and the political divisions in Kerry are actually more pronounced locally than they would have been across the country. So, for example, the first election after the Civil War came in August 1923, and the second highest vote for Republicans or for the anti-treatyites in the country was in Kerry. And then if you look 10 years ahead to 1933, within 10 years, Fianna Fáil was getting its highest vote in Kerry than in any other constituency in the country. So there is a very, very strong anti-treaty sentiment in the county in the decade after the Civil War, and indeed in subsequent years when Fianna Fáil were very much dominant across the county and across the constituency. You see that in organisational terms, in terms of the development of the party. But at the same time, Cumann na n-Éill, which was the pro-treaty party, which was founded at the end of the Civil War, holds its own for a number of years and holds its own for several years after the Civil War. But what that means then is you get those really titanic battles at election time between the candidates and between the two parties which emerged from the split in Sinn Féin. And it makes for some lively encounters at election time, to put it mildly.
And what are they running on at that time? Are they running on which side they were in the Civil War? Are they running on issues like social issues, like housing, or the economy, like you'd hear about now, like health? Or was it just what side of the Civil War you were on? And if that was the case, then, like, Was it a blame game, or what's their argument for being voted in, or what's their manifesto for being voted in?
Well, almost exclusively, the candidates and the parties talk about the Civil War, the divisions of the Civil War, and where they stood on the treaty. There are other parties, of course, at the time, particularly the Labour Party and the Farmers' Party, which was a fairly significant political force at the time. Who are the only parties really talking about social and economic issues, of which there were many in the 1920s. But Sinn Féin, or anti-treaty Sinn Féin, and then Fianna Fáil from 1926, and on the pro-treaty side, Cumann na n-Éill from the period after the Civil War, their electioneering effort and their campaigning and their messaging is almost entirely defined by we were on this side or we were on the other side. Cumann na n-Éill saying, we defended the state, we supported the treaty, we've established the independent state, and we have to abide by the terms of the treaty in order to prosper and to progress. Whereas the anti-treaty side, Sinn Féin from 1923, and then Fianna Fáil and what was left of Sinn Féin after the mid-20s, campaigning very much in opposition to the treaty and spelling out why they believed that the treaty was the wrong agreement for Ireland, and how the Republic hadn't been achieved. So probably the biggest takeaway politically from this period is that the type of ordinary challenges and socio-economic problems that ordinary citizens in Kerry are experiencing, and are, you know, endemic poverty, hardship, financial hardship, immigration, all sorts of social and economic problems, are largely being ignored by the main parties because they persist in presenting their case to the electorate based on where they stood and on which side of the treaty they stood. And that, on the one hand, contributed to the Civil War politics that we had for generations. But it meant at that pivotal moment in the early years of the new independent state that the type of issues that people were really concerned about were often being sidelined because of the dominance of the Civil War and of Civil War politics.
So Ireland gets its independence in 1922, and then the following year, in 1923, the first elections of the Irish Free State take place. And what did that tell us in Kerry, the election results of that?
Well, it was an extraordinary election in many ways because it was dominated by, it was the first election after the Civil War. So inevitably, the divisions of the war were going to surface and were going to dominate the election campaign. So you had, it was dominated by two main parties, Cumann na Réal being the pro-treaty party, which was in government under W.T. Cosgrave, and the anti-treaty Republicans on the other side. And curiously, or, you know, in terms of the election campaign itself, three of the four anti-treaty candidates were in jail at the time. So Austin Stack, Paddy Cahill and Tomás O'Donoghue are still in jail after the Civil War, and the only, actually the only Republican candidate who wasn't in jail was Tom McKellistrom, and even he didn't actively campaign because of fear of arrest, because anti-treaty Republicans were still felt very vulnerable to being detained by the authorities. So you have a situation whereby you have candidates, most of whom are in prison, on the anti-treaty side, would come in and able to proactively campaign on the ground with their candidates like Professor John Marcus O'Sullivan, like Fionnán Lynch, like James Crowley, free to campaign and free to canvass voters and to speak on the election hustings. And then you have a number of other parties like Labour, who put forward two candidates, the Farmers, who had two candidates, who really find it very difficult to kind of break into that dominance of the treaty as the main issue in the campaign. And yet, despite the fact that most of their candidates are in prison, the Republican candidates outpoll Cumann na Néill and secure 45% of the vote in Kerry and four of the seven seats, whereas Cumann na Néill only secure a third of the vote and three seats. So within those couple of months of the Civil War, you can see that the anti-treaty sentiment in Kerry is very much in the ascendancy. And from that point onwards, you know, that continued to be very much the case. And in fact, anti-treaty voting became more and more prominent as the years went on.
It's a wonder they were able to have elections at all, isn't it?
It is. That's one of the extraordinary things, I suppose, I've discovered or reflected on. The fact that these candidates and these parties and their members were fighting a war against each other a few months previously, and actually managed to go about holding, and despite some incidents of violence and outbreaks of unrest, the 1923 election remarkably passed pretty peacefully. The holding of the election was never in doubt. Republicans, even though they were abstaining from membership of Dáil Éireann, they boycotted the Dáil, but they didn't boycott the election, if that makes sense. They took part in the election. They accepted the election as a democratic process and as a democratic expression of the will of the people. But it is quite extraordinary that within a couple of months of a very, very bitter and divisive civil war, that an election campaign was held at all and held largely peacefully, despite all of those underlying tensions. And I think that's because of a tradition in Ireland that predates independence. You know, elections, even though it was a much smaller franchise and fewer people had the vote, there was a tradition of elections, you know, and parliamentary democracy dating back to Daniel O'Connell and the nationalist movement in later years, you know, recognised and accepted parliamentary democracy and elections as a means to resolve their differences or express the will of the people. So, one of the great achievements, I suppose, of the political class and indeed the electorate in the 20s is that elections actually took place at all. And and you know, despite, as I say, a couple of outbreaks of violence and some unrest, passed largely peacefully and without too much rancour.
Mm. We're here with Eoin O'Shea, the author of From Bullets to Ballots, Politics and Electioneering in Post-Civil War Kerry, 1923-33. Eoin's going to stay with us. We're going to take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. From bullets to ballots, politics and electioneering in post-Civil War Kerry 1923-33 is written by Owen O'Shea, who joins us. And Owen, we were talking about, I suppose, the first elections, and you're covering a whole decade here. And what stands out to me here is the dominance of Fianna Fáil in Kerry. They're hugely successful in this period.
Very much so, and I think that's achieved for two reasons. Up until 1926, when Fianna Fáil was founded, you must bear in mind that the majority of Kerry TDs weren't attending or sitting in the Dáil. The anti-treaty Republicans boycotted the Dáil, but De Valera, as we know, there was a division in Sinn Féin, and De Valera broke away and founded Fianna Fáil in May 1926. And when Fianna Fáil entered the Dáil in 27, it had a huge impact because for the first time, I suppose, the anti-treaty voter in Kerry and nationally indeed was being represented for the first time in Parliament. And De Valera and Fianna Fáil managed to tap into not only the anti-treaty Republican opinion and the anti-treaty constituency that was out there, they also started to talk about some of the issues that we mentioned earlier on. They also started to talk about the social and economic problems that people were experiencing. And, you know, to their credit, up until then, parties like Labour and the Farmers' Party had been very vocal in that regard. But they simply didn't have the organisation on the ground or indeed the resources to campaign more effectively in that regard. But De Valera, when he comes to Kerry and when he travels the country, is talking not just about the Civil War and how the treaty had done such damage, in his view, to Ireland, but he's also started to talk about the bread and butter issues, as they call them today, and the type of policies, you know, that Labour, for example, were talking about. And it's often said in Irish political history that Fianna Fáil stole Labour's clothes and began to talk about the type of issues that Labour and other parties, smaller parties, were talking about. But the other reason Fianna Fáil are so successful in Kerry and so dominant in these early years, and indeed for decades afterwards, is the network of branches and common that they form across the county so very quickly after the establishment of the party. And one of the stats that I quote in the book is Fianna Fáil established as many branches in its first 4 months in Kerry as Cumann na n-Éill had in 4 years. So Cumann na n-Éill between 23 and 27 had established so many branches of their party across the county. But it took Fianna Fáil just 4 months to establish as many branches towards the end of 26, and they approached electioneering with more, the word razzmatazz kind of comes to mind. But there was definitely more energy and dynamism about Fianna Fáil and their election rallies. De Valera was seen as this iconic, heroic figure. And there are some very vivid descriptions in the newspapers in Kerry at the time of his visits to Tralee and other parts of Kerry. And it creates that impression of a really energetic, vibrant movement almost, and not just a party. And that, by the early 1930s then, propels them into government in 1932. And in 32 and in the 33 election, they're winning 5 out of the 7 Dáil seats in Kerry, which is, you know, speaks for itself.
And Kerry is just one electoral district, is it? Is one, yeah.
Yeah, Kerry was one constituency, yeah, up until the mid-30s, yeah.
Was there a director of elections back then? And, like, where were they getting their kind of knowledge that allowed them to get that extra step ahead?
Well, what both parties had, I suppose, it's interesting to look at the formation of the branches. And in both Cumann na n-Éill and Fianna Fáil, they had what were known as their key men. You'll note that I didn't say women, because very, very few women are involved in politics at the time, which is, you know, speaks volumes in itself, with the exception of a couple of councillors like Kate Breen, who was a very prominent Republican councillor in Killarney. But it's interesting that the party branches were built around the sort of pillars of the community. So in the case of Cumann an Éill, it often built itself around the parish priest. And it must be remembered that the vast majority of the clergy, the Catholic clergy in Ireland at the time, were very pro-treaty and very supportive of Cumann an Éill, as were the bishops. So most Cumann an Éill branches, or at least a lot of them, are chaired by the local parish priest. The secretary might be the local bank manager or the local solicitor, the local national school teacher. And similarly in Fianna Fáil, even though it's less, there are fewer clerics involved there, it's the Fianna Fáil branches and those on the anti-treaty side are usually chaired or dominated by those who had been in the IRA or who had been active on the anti-treaty side during the Civil War. So those networks, whereas, you know, there certainly were directors of elections, there were quite sophisticated organisation when it came to election campaigns, but it's very much dominated by, I suppose, the significant figures in each community and in each parish. A rare exception actually would be, I spoke about the clergy and being primarily pro-treaty and very much supportive of Cosgrave. But Father Miles Allman is one who stands out from my home parish of Listroy, who was a brother of Dan Allman, who was killed in the Headford Junction ambush during the War of Independence. He was a real Republican firebrand and made very, very inflammatory speeches during elections. You know, there were complaints made about him to the bishop. He advocated violence, you know, at one stage, and that the IRA campaign should continue against the Free State. And he ended up actually being chairman of Fianna Fáil in the constituency in the 30s. So De Valera was very clever at, on the one hand, I suppose, distancing himself from the IRA, but very clever at involving those who had been active in the IRA during the Civil War and the War of Independence in developing the network of branches around the constituency as well.
You mentioned the women there, and like they're conspicuous by their absence. Like, what happened coming to Mon? Where did all the women go? Like, you know, like there's some amazing women here in Kerry that were involved, and to think that, you know, where is their life in politics after the fight for independence and then the Civil War?
Well, the interesting thing about the 1923 election is it's the first time in Ireland that every woman over the age of 21 is entitled to vote. Up until then, the franchise was very restricted. And you're right to say that women were barely visible or involved in politics or election campaigns at all. A couple of exceptions. I mentioned Kate Breen. Another one is Albinia Broderick, who was a Sinn Féin councillor in 1920, who had been very active in Cumann an Mon in South Kerry. But you are right, Cumann an Mon very much played a role in elections, but very much behind the scenes. If you read accounts or reports of election meetings, of speeches, you won't find any account of a woman speaking at an election rally, with rare exceptions on the Republican side during the 23 election, when people like Maud Gonn actually came to Kerry to campaign on behalf of the Republicans with Albinia Broderick. But and even in images that you see from the period of rallies and election meetings, women are nowhere to be seen. And even accounts of records of the membership of parties, it was very much, you know, a man's world, utterly dominated by politics. And, you know, it wasn't until the 40s that a woman was first elected from Kerry to the Dáil. So that's a very interesting point. Yes, Cumann an Mon played a role in elections in terms of supporting candidates, but very, very much in the background.
Mm. It seems to be like, you know, after World War One and then the War of Independence and Civil War, the women regressed kind of in this country. And I wonder, is that, you know, the church and state and De Valera and all that, did it all kind of play into
it? They were also dismissed, and I heard Mary McAuliffe, my good friend who I've worked on researching this period with, reference it recently. Women, if they were involved in politics, and there are episodes during the campaigns of women being involved in heckling and protesting at Cumann an Gael rallies in particular, they were dismissed as sort of hysterical and irrational and sort of, you know, not being very very sensible or having the wrong approach. So it's absolutely a feature of Irish life at the time. It wasn't just in politics. Women were kept out of sight and behind the scenes. And, you know, indeed, it could be argued that perhaps some of the type of socioeconomic issues that people were experiencing might have been better ventilated if there were more women in politics at the time.
Very good. Owen, stay with us because I want to talk about the cover of the book is really striking as well. And I think it kind of sums up the time. But we've lots more to talk about, from bullets to ballots, politics and electioneering in post-Civil War, Kerry, 1922 to 1923. Owen O'Shea is going to stay with us. We'll be speaking more about it after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fish mongers about how to add delicious, easy to cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer ready meals available.
The Sounds Drawer Black Friday sale is now on. Massive savings on washing machines, fridge freezers, ovens and dishwashers. Unbelievable deals on coffee machines, cordless cleaners and smartwatches. Huge savings on TVs, laptops and tablets. For our biggest ever Black Friday sale, get to your nearest Sounds Store or online at soundstore.ie.
Tugan vaccine niart bresha go de choras im yinachta, chun tuil chosin sear chinas trom húsach. Malterhuch vaccine flu oil, mo tatu shaske blin dish no nis shina, mos aibri kurim slanchahu, mo tatu gumper clina, no mo to rocht slancha fad sermahart. Malterhuch vaccine COVID ni jaga oil freshen, mo tatu shaske blin dish no nis shina, no mo to rocht slancha fad sermahart. Kur vaccine le de lista radiatala jana. Agus cosin hu hain agus da hailachs na mian amach roin. Lawr le doctor no cogashor ran fortach, no tour courage ar HSE.ie la hai chilla olish. Own HSE.
Maybe you're finally on a date again, 6 months after your divorce. Or maybe you and your better half are wondering whether a cuddle could be more than a cuddle. Or perhaps you'd like to tell a woman you're absolutely mad about that you don't feel like it tonight. There are lots of times and places where we need to say what we want and what we don't want. Whatever the moment, have the consent conversation.
A message from Cooen, a Government of Ireland agency.
Farming is changing, and with the cost of living rising, family incomes can feel under pressure. Over 450 farmers in South Kerry have taken part in the Rural Social Scheme. 40 more places are available now. So if you're a farmer or related to one, you could be eligible to join and increase your income. Work 19 and a half farm-friendly hours a week on local projects, from maintaining walkways and sports grounds to office work and more. For details, call Joseph McCrohan on 087 2849 165.
Is a Ishka Aaron Fontas Nashunda Ishka Naharan? Ta Ishka Aaron Freibrock as Ishka Old Fibli Nashunda Aholaha de Aaron. Ishka Tatlan, Savalcha, Augustine Tiefa. The fresh Ashin Tashi Freibrock as Servishi Fiol Ishka occur fall on tier. Mother Lehane Hesh, we service you no can I be the Kyantar Hirishku, is fed the Dulla Jagva la Hishke Heron, Vihikar Ursula, Shoklan the Shoktana. Eg Hain Okta Naj Naj, Do Shokta Okt, Do Shokta Hokt. Ishke Heron. Eg Sola her service Ishke de Heron.
Tesco Club Card gives you the power to more this Christmas. With incredible can't miss offers every week on Christmas favourites in store and online, like Ferrero Rocher, Jacob's Elite Favourites, and Tonics Tea Cakes, now €8. And enjoy another fantastic can't-miss offer on selected Coke, Sprite Zero and Fanta 12-can packs, now two for €11. Be sure to keep an eye out for our amazing can't-miss offers this Christmas season. Helping feed your Christmas spirit. Tesco. Every little helps. Available in most stores. Prices vary in Express. DRS and quota supply.
For daily sports updates from around the kingdom and beyond, don't miss Radio Kerry Sports News every Monday to Friday. In association with Ivertech, your local broadband and telephone provider. For the latest fixtures, results, previews and reports from the world of sport, Radio Kerry Sports News has you covered every weekday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Brought to you in association with Ivertech. Providing fast, reliable fibre broadband to Kerry homes and businesses. Book a free consultation today and find out about upgrading to a modern business telephone system. Ivertech.ie.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement. I'm Joe McGill. Owen O'Shea joins us. We're speaking about his new book, From Bullets to Ballots,
Politics and Electioneering in Post-Civil War, Kerry, 1922-33. And on the front cover of this book is a real striking image. It's of Fionnán Lynch, and he's up on a stage, and the amount of peak caps that are in the crowd, because the crowd is absolutely huge, is astounding. And he's giving it gusto on. So much so, his hand is kind of blurred because it's them old cameras back in the day where you'd have to stay still for them.
Yes.
But it's in full colour. It's a wonderful image. How did you come about it?
I'm delighted I've got the image, Joe. Yeah, because pictures of electioneering or elections in progress are, from this period, are actually very rare. And I came across the image and was very fortunate to receive permission to use it from Fionnán Lynch's grandson, Professor Tim Lynch, who's based in the Mater Hospital in Dublin. Tim very kindly agreed to provide it. It was in the possession of the Lynch family. And Fionnán Lynch, as you mentioned, from Waterville, was a very significant figure in Irish politics at this time. He was Minister for Fisheries throughout the 20s and early 30s. And was, certainly their star turn when it came to oratory and electioneering. But the image, I think, conveys kind of in many ways all of the aspects of what I cover in the book, because, you know, there is the candidate and he's on a stage, as you say, that was built specially for the purpose. He's speaking without amplification. Remember, no microphones or speakers in those days, to a huge crowd of, again, may I say, mostly men, because there's no women that I can see in the photograph anyway. And also on the stage with the candidate are the members of the press. And again, they're all men in their hats, and they're diligently sitting at a table, and they're diligently writing down every word that Fionnán Lynch is saying. So it captures, for me, I suppose, in terms of what I cover in the book, it captures the candidate, the ordinary voter, and the members of the press. But most of all, I suppose it captures how enormously significant elections were in this period, as an event, as a community occasion, as a social occasion. Bear in mind, there isn't a whole lot going on in rural Ireland for people to engage with. These were quite difficult and pretty grim times. And the fact, you know, a candidate coming to the town or the village to speak during an election was a massive occasion. After mass meetings were enormous. They're a phenomenon that has died out now, with a few exceptions. But invariably these electionary meetings and rallies attracted thousands and thousands of people. Whether they were interested in politics or not, it was a gathering, it was a community occasion. And again, we must bear in mind, with the exception of newspapers, there was no radio communication at the time. There was no Radio Kerry at the time. There were no, there weren't a huge number of election posters. There weren't election flyers being printed, with a few exceptions. So the only real opportunity the candidate had to engage with voters was to go out there and speak at these huge rallies in towns and villages all over the country without amplification.
It's amazing to think of it. You mentioned the press there. So it was newspapers, really. That's how you were going to get your opinion out there, besides these monster rallies, these big gatherings. But the newspapers, that we teach media literacy in the broadcasting course, and these newspapers were kind of influenced as well, weren't they?
Yeah, enormously. Like, I couldn't understate the influence or the impact of newspapers on elections at this time. Again, as I said a minute ago, you know, there wasn't radio or television. The only means of communication, apart from the election meeting or getting the message across, was through newspapers. And newspapers gave huge coverage to elections and politics at the time. Speeches of candidates were often produced word for word, verbatim, from start to finish, could often be devoted to, you know, given the space of a full page of a newspaper. And we're fortunate enough in Kerry at the time that there were five or six newspapers at the time. Some of them published weekly, a lot of them published every couple of days. The case of The Liberator, for example, in Tralee, which was owned by the Kerrymen, came out three times a week. So there was huge readership of newspapers. There was huge engagement. But most significantly, in terms of the influence they had on elections, the vast majority of newspapers in Kerry and in Ireland at this time, in the years after the Civil War, are pro-treaty. They're pro-Cumann na n-Éill, they're supportive of the government, they're supportive of W.T. Cosgrove. As a result, they give little sometimes negligible coverage to anti-treaty candidates. That changes a bit as Fianna Fáil comes on the scene. But the editors and the owners, particularly in the case of the Kerryman, which was very influential, are pro-treaty in their outlook, and that's reflected in the editorials. The editorials are very powerful at the time. They advise people or suggest how people should vote. They recommend particular candidates. So that had an enormous influence. That only changed in 1928 when Paddy Cahill, who had been a Republican TD from the 20s and had been head of the Kerry No. 1 Brigade of the IRA during the War of Independence, he saw an opening for a Republican or an anti-treaty paper. So he founded the Kerry Champion in 1928, which went on to become very, very supportive of Dáil and Fianna Fáil and provided a bit more balance, if you like, in the newspaper coverage in Kerry for subsequent years.
Like we see the picture of Fionnuala Lynch there, and he's giving it gusto. So obviously these people had to be great orators, and they had to be able to project their voice. They had to be kind of large in life personalities. Were they kind of entertainers as well?
Well, here's the thing: like a lot of them actually weren't great orators. They had little or no public speaking experience. Some of them. Now Lynch is an exception. Also, Professor John Marcus O'Sullivan, who's an academic, he's from a very well-to-do family, very well-spoken, very eloquent, articulate. They were really very strong on the hustings. If you take somebody like Austin Stack, who headed the poll in 23 and who remained in politics until 1927, Stack, even by his own account, was a very, very shy, hesitant, reluctant public speaker. People like Tom McKellistrom were, you know, there were a lot of people who came into politics at that time who had little or no public speaking experience, who didn't have experience in politics. So it must have been hugely, I'm going to say, intimidating for people who weren't, you know, didn't have that kind of confidence or maybe eloquence that you have amongst the trained politicians that we have nowadays, or the media trained politicians that we have nowadays, to get up in front of these thousands of people and to speak, you know, and then to go to Dublin and to speak in our national parliament in Dáil Éireann and to articulate the positions on the part of their constituents. But definitely having those oratorical skills like people like Fionnuala Lynch and John Marcus O'Sullivan had definitely gave them an edge, I would think, when it came to articulating their message during elections.
You know, there's other political names that are mentioned, like McElstrom, which has kind of resonated through the century, really, that name.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Tom McElstrom, who was elected in 23, remained in the Dáil until 1969, and he remains the longest ever serving Kerry TD. And indeed, of course, his son and grandson subsequently went into politics. It's a very pivotal time for, I suppose, the origins of political dynasties. A lot of them we've had in Kerry, you know. And again, they were from differing backgrounds. There's a kind of a clear class difference as well between the two parties. Cumann na n-Éill tends to be dominated by, you know, John Marcus O'Sullivan, who was, as I say, a professor of history, a very renowned academic in University College Dublin, who came back to immerse himself in politics and whose uncle was the Bishop of Kerry, Charles O'Sullivan. You know, Fionnuala Lynch would have come from a reasonably well-to-do background, whereas those on the anti-treaty of the Republican side, and, you know, which reflected in Fianna Fáil in later years, were from rural farming backgrounds, maybe the lower and the working classes. So that's an interesting dynamic as well. But yeah, definitely some of the names that you're seeing coming through politics in Kerry at that time re-emerge over the decades as we go on.
You know, it's often, when we talk about Civil War politics, like, it's mentioned Dev and Michael Collins. Like, does Michael Collins get mentioned much, you know, in the immediate aftermath, say, of his death and in this period, in the decade we're talking about?
To some extent. I mean, what's interesting about the election speeches and the candidates is that they talk about the Civil War and the divisions of the treaty, but it rarely gets personal, or it rarely gets down to sort of personalities. They tend to kind of play the ball rather than the man. Now, Dev comes in for plenty of criticism from those on the anti-treaty side on the pro-treaty side, who effectively blamed him for starting the Civil War in the first place. But Collins doesn't feature so much. I mean, one of the interesting things I looked at is I wanted to find out Were the atrocities or tragedies of the Civil War in Kerry mentioned by candidates during their election campaigns? And the short answer to that is no. And, you know, because I went looking, you know, did for example, the Republicans talk about Ballyseedy or Bahax or what happened at Clashmelkin or Countess Bridge? And then maybe I naively thought that they did. But of course, you know, people didn't really need to be reminded about what happened. That was very fresh in the memory. No more than those on the pro-treaty side spoke about Knocknagoshal or what happened to Free State forces in Kerry during the Civil War. So whereas the Civil War was there, you know, the shadow of the Civil War was there, the specific incidents or tragedies of the war in Kerry weren't spoken about. And I suppose that reflected a general silence that dominated about those particular incidents and the awful fatalities and bloodshed and heartache that all that caused.
Mm. You'd wonder then, was there much cooperation, you know, between parties in this decade for Kerry's sake?
I mean, I suppose there wasn't. Like, as I said, until 1927, when Fianna Fáil went into the Dáil, Kerry was only represented in the Dáil by three of the seven TDs in the constituency: Fiona Lynch, John Marcus O'Sullivan and James Crowley, all of whom are members of the governing party. So there are those crucial early years where Kerry, at least the anti-treaty constituency in Kerry, doesn't have any parliamentary representation. That very much changes after 27, when Fianna Fáil are effectively forced to abandon their policy of abstaining from the Dáil and enter Parliament. And then you do get into more of the toing and froing that, you know, that like we see nowadays in Parliament or the Dáil, the argy-bargy between government and opposition. Now, it must be said, Labour had provided that opposition really in the early 20s until Fianna Fáil came into Parliament, but they didn't really benefit from that in Kerry because they never had any, they never came close to winning a Dáil seat. They had a number of county councillors and so on. But did they cooperate then after that for Kerry's benefit? I suppose it took a long time for the divisions over the Civil War to sort of ease a little bit and, you know, where people came together and cooperated, but the rivalries and the animosity between the parties, whatever, but between the individuals, certainly, probably, it could be argued, held back the county or held back the country indeed, because of the focus on the Civil War as an issue rather than the real bread and butter issues that people were dealing with.
Mm. Now we Fine Gael hasn't come up in our conversation. There's a reason for that, because it hasn't really existed yet.
No, the extent of my research, I just took the decade after the Civil War because I suppose it was 1933 when Fianna Fáil reached the height of its support in Kerry, and I could have probably gone on further, but Fine Gael doesn't emerge until the end of 33 when Cumann na n-Éill merges with the Blue Shirts of the Army Comrades Association and the a party called the National Centre Party, which had broken away from Cumann na n-Éill earlier on. So Cumann na n-Éill effectively morphs into Fine Gael in the early and mid-1930s. And of course, that whole Blue Shirt period is something that we could spend hours talking about as well, because that really brought the tensions of the Civil War to the surface. And even when Eoghan O'Duffy, the Blue Shirt leader, came to Tralee in 1934, he was nearly killed, and there was a plot to assassinate him, but maybe that's one for another day. But I suppose it's really then with the formation of Fine Gael in 1933-34 that things sort of, the alignments become a lot clearer and you have a more defined party on one side and other side of the treaty divide, with Fianna Fáil in and out of government, and Fine Gael in and out of government, on the other side with various coalition partners.
Yeah, Owen, you're always kind of working away on something, and I don't know where you get the time for all this with busy family life as well. But tell us about the other book briefly. I know you were on with Jerry talking about that, but it's around this period of time as well.
That emerged from the Kerry Civil War Conference back in 2023, which was a three-day conference held at Chiemsa Tíre. So the book is a collection of essays based on the papers and research presented at the conference by a whole range of contributors from Kerry and beyond, looking at various aspects of the Civil War. So really pleased that we've got that published as well. It just happens to be coming out at the same time. So again, covering similar, I suppose, whereas that covers the Civil War itself, my own book then looks at the period thereafter. So hopefully that will be of interest to people as well.
And you're working on an exhibition as well at the moment?
Speaking of Fianna Fáil, next year, 2026, will be the centenary of the foundation of Fianna Fáil, which was, you know, for all sorts of reasons, an absolutely pivotal moment in Irish history and certainly in Irish politics. So tying in with the research I've done, I suppose I'm putting together an exhibition which will be hosted by the library in Tralee and Killarney on the early years of Fianna Fáil and Kerry, so sort of in the period between 26 when the party was founded and 32 when the party went into government, looking at just some of the personalities, who the TDs were for Fianna Fáil at the time, how they established their common network so effectively, and how much of an impact they had on politics and constituency. And thankfully I received some funding, a bursary from the Royal Irish Academy, who support commemorative events and centenary events. So that'll be something for the new year, just to mark, you know, what was a very important moment in Irish political history, the establishment of Fianna Fáil in May 1926.
Excellent, and we'll hear more about that when it's being realised. And that book we were talking about is The Civil War in Kerry and Beyond, Histories, Memories and Legacies, and it is by Four Courts Press, and it's available in all good bookshops. Your own book, Owen, where can people avail of it, From Bullets to Ballots?
Published by UCD Press. It's as the saying goes, in all good bookshops this week, and the launch will take place in O'Mahony's bookshop in Tralee next Friday night, the 28th of November at 7 o'clock. So hope to see everybody there, and delighted to that O'Mahony's. We're very fortunate in Kerry to have so many good quality bookshops and so many independent and locally owned bookshops as well, who are always very supportive of local authors. So delighted to say we're going to O'Mahony's on Friday night at 7 to launch that book. And as I always do, you know, I encourage people to shop local and buy their books in local bookshops rather than online, because that supports, you know, the local bookshops that we had, and in turn supports local authors. So hopefully see a lot of people there on Friday night.
Yeah, I think that this would be vital as well, on to have in schools around the county as well, these the book, this book in particular, because I think it just educates people so much in kind of the foundation of our politics here in the county. Well, not a lot of people mightn't realise, because I know from talking to people, like, you know, we talked about Fine Gael there, and even how to say Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, you know, you'd hear Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, but you know, even when that started, you know, so I think it's a vital importance.
If the decadence of centenaries has taught us anything, and the centenary and the commemorations of the Civil War, it's that people are really, really eager to engage and discover more about the history of that period, because for generations it wasn't talked about, as has often been said. But I find certainly in schools there's a huge appetite now for local history. I've done a number of talks to primary schools, and primary school kids are absolutely fascinated by all this period. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there have been generations where people have been brought up in households, you know, you're either a Fianna Fáil house or a Fine Gael house, for the most part, with some exceptions, other parties obviously as well. But people haven't really kind of drilled down into that and engaged with how or why all of that came about. So that's why I've tried to look at it in a Kerry context, by speaking about the local people who were involved, what elections were like, and why those bitternesses during the Civil War dominated everything in Irish politics for so many years and so many generations.
Yeah, well done, Owen. Congratulations, Cogardagus. From Bullets to Ballots, Politics and Electioneering in Post-Civil War, Kerry 1922-33. It's in all good bookshops now. And Owen, we wish you all the best of luck with it, and well done again. You're doing some great work.
Gurumil Mahagut, Joe.
We're going to take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan's.
Radio Kerry.
A reminder for our monthly In Focus photography slot, which is the first Saturday of every month. We give you a theme to send in your photos and to get you inspired. And a theme for December is making the most of it. So you've still about a week and a half to get your photos in. Send them in midday Wednesday before the first Saturday of the month. And the theme is making the most of it. And send a little story as well. Dominic and I love to see the stories to go with the photos. No more than three photos. You can send one or two or three. It's up to you. And we really look forward to receiving them every month. Now, that's all we have time for on the programme this morning. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Francis is on the way. So keep it here on Radio Kerry. And I'll talk to you again in a fortnight's time for In Focus and the rest of the Saturday Supplement. Until then, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.